Hello.
Welcome to the makeup lecture for EE-509 due to the snow day last Friday. Apologies for not being able to reschedule, but it's impossible essentially to get a block of time at such short notice, and indeed one that everybody can attend anyway. So, the topic today is protocol analysis, and specifically what we're looking at is local area networks and the analysis of the performance of local area networks in terms of things like delay and throughput of packets. And why we term it protocol analysis is that the single biggest factor impacting on the performance of these local area networks is the medium access control policy or protocol used. And what we'll see is that there's a number of different options which lead to a number of different issues regarding performance. But if you have a number of computers which share a medium, then the policy that you use to share that medium is going to impact on performance. And so that's what we're going to take a look at today. We're going to start with the various sort of options that you have, and there's three basic options, of which we'll say a little bit about two of them. And then again, we're going to look at the analysis for two of these options, which have sort of significantly different characteristics. Again, there's many, many flavors, but the goal here is to give you an idea of what the approach has to be to try and determine performance for these different types of local area networks. Okay, so the reference we're using is Hammond and O'Reilly, which is very old now, 24 years old. There's a couple of reasons for using it. One is that this is essentially when this work was done, and so at the time this would have been pretty cutting edge. And it is a good place where all of these types of results are gathered together. So essentially what's happened is that the examples in the book are out of date. You know, technology has moved on in terms of the particularly sort of speed, transmission speed. But the basic approaches that were proposed in 1986 are the approaches that are still used today. So it's worth going back to sort of the original source to have a look. And the specific chapters that you would want to have a look at are 5, which discusses these. It gives you an overview of the various protocols and approaches that are used. And then 7 and 9, which deal with the analysis of the different flavors that we're going to have a look at. Okay, so what exactly are we thinking about here? And again, what we're looking at is local area networks. And the idea of a local area network is that it provides point-to-point connectivity between two stations or nodes. So a computer can talk to another computer without going through any additional transfer points. And in the context of layered architectures, these local area networks operate, we say they operate at the data link layer. And what that means is that since there's no hops, there's no multiple hops, there's no need to move up to the network layer and do route planning. You need to somehow provide the point-to-point connectivity. Okay, now, the issue that makes this complicated and makes it interesting from an analysis point of view is the fact that frequently the medium over which this connection occurs is shared. And so this might be in the form of a bus that all of the nodes are connected to, or it might be over a radio link where the same frequencies may be used by different pairs of connections. Okay, so we need to have some way of regulating the sharing of the medium, and this is done using the medium access control sublayer. So this is a portion of the data link layer, and it will in some way try and ensure that connections can be made and don't clash. Okay. And so, obviously, this need to share is going to have an impact on the performance of the network, and this impact can be characterized in terms of access delay and or the overall network efficiency. Okay, so what either the throughput is or sort of how much useful work the network is doing. So what we're going to do here, again, is look at a number of MAC strategies. We'll see there are three basic strategies, two of which sort of are complicated enough to require analysis. And we're going to look at the approach to analyzing their performance characteristics. Okay, so what are these three basic techniques? The three basic techniques are fixed assignment, reservation-based, or contention-based. So fixed assignment divides the resources or the channel up into sub-channels and then sort of allocates a dedicated sub-channel to each connection. And examples of this are time division multiple access or frequency division multiple access. In this case, if two computers are talking to each other, then they'll be given either a time slot or a frequency band, and all of their communication will occur along that slot or band, and there will be no interference from other computers or other connections. Now, the analysis for this would be in terms of a blocking analysis. So you only have so many connections to allocate, and so you could analyze, sort of based on demand, how likely is it that a certain connection would or would not be able to be made. So we're not going to consider fixed assignment in this lecture. You've seen it in other lectures in the terms of Erlang's formulas. Okay. The second method is reservation-based. And in this case, some sort of turn-taking mechanism is implemented so that at most one node can transmit at any given time. Okay. And within reservation-based, you can have a centralized controller. And this leads to a polling system, which is one of the systems that we'll analyze. Or you don't need a centralized controller. You could have a distributed controller. And in this case, you have a token scheme where the token is passed from one station to the next. And again, the turn-taking is regulated by you can only transmit when you have the token. And the analysis of this is similar to that of centralized control, and just sort of, and we won't consider it here, although again, it is discussed in detail in Hammond and O'Reilly. The final method is contention-based access, and in this case, nodes transmit when they have data to transmit, and then just deal with the consequences of more than one node transmitting at the same time. So if a collision occurs, if more than one node transmits at the same time, this has to be detected, and there has to be some sort of mechanism for resolving that collision. Typically the mechanism is that the nodes will choose some random amount of time for their retransmission. So you hope that if they choose different random times, that eventually they will be able to transmit. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do now is have a look at some of these access techniques. Okay, so in terms of protocols, the local area networks are typically, the protocols are defined typically within the IEEE 802 family of protocols, and within this family, three layers are specified. On top is the 802.2 logical link control layer, and this is common to all of the protocols, and this provides the sort of reliable data stream for the protocols, and so it will do things like error control and correction. Okay, and ensure that sort of point to point that an accurate data stream gets through. And below that is a bundle of the MAC layer and the physical layer. And so for these protocols, those come as pairs. And indeed, that can lead to sort of a number of flavors within a different protocol. And each of these presents a slightly different architecture. So you can see run from 802.3 is CSMA/CD. So this is sort of your classic Ethernet, similar to your classic Ethernet protocol. And then you have token bus and token ring protocols. DQDP is another. Sorry, DQDB is another token protocol, a broadband protocol, a fiber protocol, 802.11, so this would, and 802.16, so wireless protocols, and 802.15, a personal area, so another wireless protocol, sort of, which at some point bore some resemblance to Bluetooth. Okay, so you have the combination of the MAC and the physical, and again, this can lead to flavors within the protocol. For instance, for 802.11, you have A, B, G, N, all of which have similar MAC layers, but actually different physical layers transmitting at different frequencies, etc. So what we are concerned with now is, again, not the physical layer, but the MAC layer and how sharing is accomplished. And we can see within these, typically it is a combination of either tokens or contention resolution. Okay, and so all of these schemes are still on the go in various sort of networking aspects. So it's not, again, it's just because it was done in the 80s does not mean that it's sort of irrelevant. Polling networks find their way into wireless access protocols like the 802.11, 802.16 in terms of quality of service provision, telephony networks, which, again, it's sort of outside of this protocol net, but they also might, in some cases, will use polling schemes for quality of service provision, passive optical networks, and Bluetooth networks all use polling schemes. Okay, so they ask users what their data requirements are and allocate based on those requirements. Token rings are less common. They are used in some proposed optical ring architectures, and FDDI is based on a token ring scheme, and FDDI is still used in some backbone networks. So they are less common, and again, in terms of analysis, they're similar to the polling networks, so we're not going to sort of dwell as spend as much time with them, although we will look at how they work. And finally, contention resolution schemes are used in your classic local, your classic Ethernet setups, although, again, some Ethernets now are switched, but some will still be contention-based, and also in wireless access setups. Okay, so we're going to have a look at these three flavors, the polling networks, the token ring networks, and the contention-based networks, and see a bit about how they work, and then we'll move on to analysis. So, a polling network is has a centralized controller, and the task of the central controller is to enforce a turn-taking mechanism among the terminals. And so what the central controller will pull the terminals in a predetermined order, and when the terminal is pulled, or terminal or station is pulled, then it will transmit its backlog of packets to the central controller, which will forward it on to the other computers. And we can, the access to this network can either be sort of a single device, or it can be a terminal interchange, which is, again, controlling or coordinating a number of devices. Okay. And the important point is that all of the information flows through the central controller. Okay. There are two basic flavors of polling. There's roll call polling, and again, in this case, the central controller sends a go-ahead message to each station in turn, and the station, when it gets the go-ahead message, transmits its backlog of messages, and then notifies the central controller it's done, and when the central controller is notified, it will go and notify the next station on the list to go ahead. Okay. Hub polling is just a slight modification which is designed to speed things up slightly, and here it's closer to a distributed protocol in the sense that the go-ahead packet contains the next station's address, And so if the stations now monitor a control channel, they can determine when their time is without having to be to go through the central without having to receive the go ahead directly from the central controller. It's still centralized in the sense that the communication of packets flows through the central controller. Okay. Token rings are a decentralized token system. And so here there is no central controller, but rather the stations pass the token from one station to the next. The topology is a ring, and so that means that the ordering of the passing of the token is determined by the physical layout of the stations. The station is passed, the token is passed from one station on the ring to the next one on the ring, sort of as you go around the ring. This is distinct from a token bus topology, where, again, the idea of token passing is the same, but the access medium is a bus, and so there has to be some decision as to the ordering of which station to pass the token to next. And so that creates a virtual ring, but not a physical ring. For token rings, you have a physical ring. Okay. And typically the token is a bit in the header of the packet that is set sort of either busy or not busy. And so the station is able to sort of process that bit, and if it's not busy, it can set it to busy and then transmit its data. Okay. Now, typically, again, the station, when it has the token, can transmit all of its data. There's also a permutation where it will only transmit a fixed amount of data before releasing the token. If it transmits all of its data, again, it's very similar to the polling network. There are also variations on how the token is released, and these variations, we'll go over them, but primarily they have some impact on the analysis, again, in terms of the polling networks. There was always only one station transmitting at a time. Or one station with data on the network at a time. Potentially, in this case, there can be multiple transmissions active on the ring at the same time. And we'll see how that works now, or in a moment. Okay, so again, when the station gets the token, it can either have an exhaustive service, so they'll transmit all the waiting packets, so that's very close to a polling network, or a non-exhaustive service where the station is allowed to transmit for a fixed number of bits or for a fixed number of time, or for a fixed amount of time. Okay. And the observation here is that if you have a light load, these are essentially equivalent. And so, again, if the number of waiting packets is such that you could transmit them in the appropriate amount of time, then there is no difference. Okay, so what factors affect the performance of token rings? Well, the delay in forwarding the packets, the delay in the stations plus the delay it takes to travel around the station, the time it takes to transmit packets, and the time it takes to transfer the token. Now, again, we're not going to do the analysis, but if you would want to do the analysis, you can incorporate this token transfer delay into the packet transmission time, and the setup you get is going to be very similar to what we'll see for the polling analysis. So, we said that there were different policies for releasing the token, and so just to go over those, you have a multiple token policy, and here the station generates a free token immediately following the transmission of its last bit of data. And in this case, you can have multiple busy tokens and a free token on the ring at the same time. In the case of the next case would be single token, where the transmitting station has to erase its own busy token. And in this case, you'll only have one token on the ring at a time. And it is possible in this case that the transmission time might be greater than the ring latency. And so in that case, the packet would essentially, the station will be still transmitting while it's received the sort of the front end of its packet back around. Okay. And finally, in single packet transmission, the transmitting station generates the free token after it's erased its packets from the network. And we'll look at sort of how those differ now. Okay, so again, in the multiple token case, the station, the token is in one, the token is free. Station 1 captures the token. As soon as it's transmitted its data, it generates a new token. And in 3, we see Station 2 then captures that free token. As soon as it's transmitted its data, it generates a new token. So you end up with the multiple packets plus a token circling the network at the same time. In the case of single token operation, station 1 again captures the token, it transmits its data. As soon as the token comes back around to station 1, it will release it, even though, and at this point, its transmission is still on the network. Again, potentially, if it's a very long transmission, a second station might grab that token while the first packet's still on the network. And in the final case of single packet operation, that gets us back to more our polling case where since the station has to remove its packet before it will generate a free token. So in that case, you will have only one transmission on the ring at the same time. So that is the last we're going to see of token rings. And mainly, I want you to just have in your heads that there is an option for sort of a decentralized turn-taking mechanism, and that the analysis for it is similar to what we'll see for the polling networks, although, again, slightly complicated by the token release policy. Our final option is the contention resolution, And the initial flavor of these policies was Aloha, which sort of was proposed for a very specific setup, as we'll see. And this led to the quite generic CSMA CD contention resolution protocols. So the Aloha Protocol was developed in 1970 at the University of Hawaii, and they had a very sort of different from the usual problem in that they wanted to link distributed campuses that were sort of spread over long distances using radio links. Okay. And so the dominant characteristic, as we'll see, is the fact that the propagation delays are quite high for these protocols. And because of the sort of distance factors and sort of the sporadic nature of the data to be sent, it was proposed that if a station had data to transmit, it sent it, and then, again, if there was a collision, it would go to resend the data at a later date. Okay. This protocol was later applied to the wired networks, and the CSMA CD protocol was used in the original Ethernet. And these protocols in turn became the basis for the wireless Mac protocols such as MAC-A. Okay. And there are various refinements such as slotted Aloha, which was just designed to improve the performance of Aloha, and we'll again see that in the analysis phase. Okay. And so, again, the primary feature of Aloha was long propagation delays relative to the transmission time. And what this meant was that it took a long time to detect collisions or to sense that the medium was busy. In a wired setting, the propagation delays are quite short, so this allowed for a few additional features to be added. The first of these was carrier sensing, and since the propagation time is short, it's worth sort of listening and seeing if the medium is busy before you start your own transmission. Okay, and so this helps to avoid collisions. And additional performance improvements can be obtained using collision detection, which just essentially cuts the transmission short when collisions are or collision avoidance, which is designed to do some signaling to sort of come to let people know that you want to transmit before sending the longer transmission. Okay, so to look at those, we need to make some decisions about what to do, sort of in these new cases. So we already said that in Aloha, you transmit, and if you detect a collision, well, you stop and you retransmit at some random time. So that's the basic policy. So now we've said that we're, in addition, listening to the carrier. And one question is, well, if you detect that the carrier is busy, what do you do about it? What decision do you make? And in this case, you can either just reschedule the transmission for another random time, and that's called non-persistent Or you can try transmitting as soon as the channel is detected to be idle. That's what the original Ethernet protocol did. The risk you run there is that sort of if a number of stations have detected the collision and are all waiting to transmit, you're going to get another collision initially. Or you can sort of compromise between those two and use a p-persistent policy where you transmit with a probability p when the channel goes idle or delay for some period, or one period with a probability 1 minus p. Okay, and so here we see how that works. Your station has a packet ready to transmit, and they first sense the medium, and if they're using a non-persistent policy, they transmit immediately when the channel is sensed idle. Or if it's not sensed idle, they wait. Okay, or p-persistent, again, with some probability they delay their transmission, or with some probability when the channel is sent idle, they transmit. Okay, so eventually they transmit, and they wait for an acknowledgement then of their transmission. So if they receive the acknowledgement, they're happy the packet has been sent correctly. If they don't, they go into a collision resolution mechanism, the back-off algorithm. Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute. Again, collision detection is an improvement in the sense that instead of continuing a transmission that's colliding, once the collision is detected, the transmission is aborted, and a jam signal is sent to alert other stations to the collision. Okay, and then you go into your back-off contention resolution strategy. So, finally, you have your contention resolution strategy. And in this case, you compute some random time to back off, and you delay for that random time, sort of a multiple of the packet transmission time times that random time. Now, typically, the determination of the random time is, or the random number, is based on, it changes dynamically with the number of collisions that the packet has already experienced. Okay, and the most common strategy is what's called binary exponential backoff. And for this strategy, each station adjusts its k according to the number of times it's attempted to transmit the packet, and it does this it increases k exponentially. Okay, so if you've had c collisions, there are 2 to the c possible values of k. And the philosophy behind this is as a form of congestion control. The more collisions you have, the more you infer that there's sort of the network is busy, And so you seek to try and lighten the load on the network by spreading out your transmission times. Okay. The 802.3, so the CSMA/CD strategy used by IEEE, truncates that. And so the maximum value for C used is 10, and sort of if you have 11 collisions, then you still stop at C equals, for the 11th, it's still K equals 2 to the 10 minus 1. For the 12th, it's K equals 2 to the 10 minus 1. Okay. And that's a rather large number, so it shouldn't present too much of a problem. Okay, so I'm going to pause there and sort of process this as one unit, and then I'll take up with performance measures and then looking at the analysis of performance. Hello, where are you? Oh, maybe I have to stop.